The following show is dedicated to Mia Park and Barbara Yang. The views expressed on the following show may not be those of the hosts, guests, or WSPN Skidmore Radio. Talk Saratoga is produced by Saratoga Broadcasting Incorporated and may not be reproduced in part or in whole unless expressed written approval is given. Now, here are the hosts of Talk Saratoga, Rick Thompson and a Saratoga All-Star.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Saratoga. I'm your host, Rick Thompson, and you're listening to WSPN 91.1 FM Skidmore Radio. And I'm glad you're with us this morning. On November 1st, we turned over a new month last night, and we've shot through 10 months of the year, which is kind of surprising. And don't forget to turn your clocks back 1 hour tonight, or you're going to be late for everything tomorrow. So I want to welcome two of our guests. They happen to be commissioners of Saratoga, and they're doing a great job, and they're running for re-election in a few days, Tim Cole and Chuck Marshall. And good morning, guys.
Good morning, Rick. Nice to thanks for having us on your program.
Oh, it's good to have you here. It's always great to find out what our commissioners have done in the past few years and, you know, what their plans are for the next two. So, Tim, I want to start with you because you run under the Democrat and Republican lines, correct?
Yes. So I'm endorsed by the Republicans, the Democrats, and the independent group, One Saratoga.
Okay. That's great. I think One Saratoga is kind of moving into a bigger portion of the voting bloc in the past couple of years.
Well, you know, it's a great concept, city before party. I think it's, you know, it's attractive to many people in our community.
I also think that it's a place where, you know, normal people who aren't polarized by the two parties can vote comfortably. I mean, I think the slate of candidates on One Saratoga this year, you have, you know, Tim, who has a law enforcement background, Joanne Kiernan's a CPA, John Safford's been the mayor, but, you know, before that, built municipal software. I have an engineering background. So, you know, Jess Truzzi's a project manager. I mean, you have a breadth of people who aren't just Democrats or Republicans. They're professionals.
Right. And, you know, we talked about the show about the form of government, and having as many professionals on the council, it's kind of good to see.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, just to dovetail with what Chuck said, if you were a Fortune 500 company and you were hiring a group of folks to run your corporation, you know, certainly everyone on a One Saratoga line, you know, have the background, the resume and experience to do the job.
Yeah, before I moved up here, I moved up in 86, got married to a Saratoga girl in 84, and we moved up here. She wanted to be near her parents, as a lot of women do. I don't know if they think their husband's going to toss them around, so they want their parents handy. But before that, they used to have no-party elections. And I really never quite figured how that worked, but I guess it didn't matter what party you belonged to. You just ran on a platform. And as somebody was saying the other day, they wrote in, I don't know what Facebook page it was, but they said they wish they could go back to that. And in a way, I could see that. But then again, I think you have to stand for values of what, you know, a little bit of what your party does, I think.
Yeah, I just think, though, like, if you look at the national level, it's just so divisive. I mean, again, there, you know, from my perspective in my department, there's no Republican or Democrat way to plow a street.
Right.
You know, like, the street has to get plowed regardless of, you know, who's in office. And that's actually something my wife and I talk about a lot is that, you know, people, like the people that do the jobs aren't necessarily the elected officials. Like, you know, the DPW crews that are out there are going to do the work regardless of, you know, who's in charge.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I remember one election when they had the swearing in, and we had a terrible snowstorm. So the new commissioner had to send the crews out while they were having the ceremony. So, like you said, and I don't think he had it. Well, he worked for another department when he was in City Hall, but doesn't matter who you are, you have to do the job. And did you find when you were running the first time that you had to kind of immerse yourself into what position you were running for so you had some idea of what to do if you were elected?
Yeah, so for myself, so this is my second term. I'm running unopposed, as mm-hmm. we mentioned, with the endorsements of the three lines. But the first time I ran, it was almost 3 years ago, I knocked on, you know, hundreds and hundreds of doors to learn the issues in the community. And we keep going back to this issue of what I would call political tribalism. I think the community was tired of the anger coming out of the embarrassment of the way people were carrying on in the city council meetings with the public and among each other. And I know, you know, the mayor and myself and Chuck, since he's been there, you know, we're focusing on being professional and to raise people up, not go down into the gutter.
Sure.
And we want to try to lead by example. And I know that's what the community wants as well.
I know everything's become a little more civil at the meetings, because for a while we were kind of a joke of politics, you know, in Saratoga. And that shouldn't have been, but, you know, you have personality conflicts that get to be the extreme, and that's pretty tough. Let's get into a couple topics, and then I want to get back to, you know, you've been interviewed by League of Women Voters and different things, and some of the topics that you touched on are pretty interesting. But one of the topics that has been going on for years is the homeless population. And somebody said to me the other day, we were driving through the city, and they said, we don't see many homeless people anymore. You know, they used to be all over the place. But
yeah, so, you know, I'm the public safety commissioner, so mm-hmm. I'm responsible for safety, you know, throughout the city. And when I was running for office, it was a priority of mine to address the homeless issue. Which is obviously very complicated. It's an issue not just nationally and internationally. And we've accomplished quite a bit since I've been in office, and I'm going to take some time to go through it because it is near and dear to my heart.
Sure.
When I came into office, we had one community engagement officer, and that's an officer that's assigned to walk up and down on Broadway on foot or on bicycle, and they're interacting with the homeless, too, to try to get them the services they need. But at the same time, you know, there's a concept in policing called omnipresence policing. They're present. So people, the store owners and the tourists, feel safe, and they're a deterrent for crime as well. When I came into office, we had a second community engagement officer, and we made it a priority. So in other words, we don't take them out of their assignments, even when they have to move into other areas. If they have to go to court, we backfill them. So that's certainly a priority for us, to keep them engaged. And then the second thing we did, we re-engaged our donation boxes in the city. They had them years ago. Joanne Yepsen actually had the initiative to put them out, the boxes, their collection boxes,
okay,
for the homeless to give directly to our nonprofits in our city, like RISE and Shelters of Saratoga. So they actually got broken into, so they were all taken away. So we put them back, but instead of accepting, you know, cash or coins, we put a QR code. So you can scan the QR code, and that money will go directly to Shelters of Saratoga or RISE. And we work collaboratively with those groups, and they actually develop the message on the box, which is more important, in my view, than actually collecting the money. And in substance, it says, be part of the solution. Don't give money directly to panhandlers. Give it to our nonprofits. And there is a big distinction in our city between the homeless and the panhandlers. 90% of our panhandlers are not homeless.
No,
you know,
right.
I know most of them. They're housed, and they're just being opportunistic. But that passed our council, you know, 5-0, to put those boxes back on Broadway. And then we had some additional signage, roadway signage, up in Circular and Broadway, again, to tell the community not to give money to people in the roadway because it's unsafe.
Right.
Some people. So that signage has helped. And then when I first came to office, I went down to the White Plains, the city of White Plains. I know the public safety commissioner, David Chong, who came out of, you know, New York City Police Department, who's a 4-star chief, very well regarded. I said, tell me what's working for your city. and they have a hot team, the housing outreach team, they call it, and then they have a social worker embedded with that hot team. So here what we did was we took a peer-to-peer counselor from RISE, and we had an excellent relationship with them, and we embedded them with our CEOs. So they go out collaboratively, and they try to address the folks that have mental illness and substance abuse issues. And I just want to give credit and a shout-out to RISE, because they just recognized last week at their fundraiser our great partnership and our great collaboration, and they honored six of our officers that work together. And then the final piece, what we did, we passed a no camping ordinance.
Okay.
And the goal of that ordinance is, again, to connect people to service, to services. Certainly, I believe strongly it's not humane to encourage people to live on the street or to die on the street. We need to get them the services they need. So that's the comprehensive approach. It's not all or nothing. I ran on this comprehensive approach, and I believe it's working.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, as, I don't know, my daughter was in school, she's 34 now, but when she went to Spa Catholic, she came home and she said, "Hey, Mom, I saw a man going through the dumpster today at school." And to me, that was the first indicator that we never had a homeless problem in Saratoga. I'm sure everywhere else, but we were sheltered a little bit. And then it started to grow. And like you said, it's all over the world now. But a friend of mine, we used to have coffee downtown at the Coffee Traders when they were open. And there would be homeless people coming in all the time. And they would give them a free drink or water. But he said when they come in to ask for, they would have a woman come in and say, "You know, can I have a gallon of milk?" He said, "Well, I'll tell you what. No, the money, because I need milk for my kids." He said, "Well, I'll tell you what, I'll give you the milk." They would turn around and walk away instead of taking the milk. I mean, it's very hard to distinguish against the panhandlers and the homeless people.
Yeah, that's a good point. And the point I'd like to make, too, there's different types of homelessness. And in our community, certainly the vast majority of the homeless are addicted to substances, mm-hmm. or have mental health issues. The folks that are financially homeless, by New York State law, Saratoga County is mandated to house them. So I don't think people understand that. Like, so if you miss your rent and all of a sudden you're homeless, the county is mandated and will house you. Like, they have to house you. You have to follow the rules.
Right.
Like, you can't be on drugs.
Right,
you have to stop using. But they will house you. So we're left dealing with a difficult community, which are those with mental health issues and those with substance abuse issues. And sometimes they're hard to reach. And that's why we have to have this comprehensive approach. And the one thing I failed to mention when I was just chatting is we have the outreach court led by Judge Vero here. So when the homeless community get tickets or open containers or violating no camping ordinance, they go before Judge Vero, and she has the option to sentence them or apply conditions to them that they will continue to work with RISE to get the services they need.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it has to be a comprehensive approach.
Oh, sure. Chuck, does this go through, excuse me, through other departments such as yours, Public Works?
I mean, Public Works gets involved if the homeless have, for lack of better terms, left something on the street and there's something that has to be picked up. Ultimately, it's my department that will take care of cleaning up the stuff that's left. I think the bigger issue is that as a member of the city council, you have a responsibility not just to your department, but the city as a whole. So one of the things that I, you know, have previously brought up and I still remain supportive of is the sale of 5 William Street for the establishment of a homeless reserve. You know, we're in a somewhat bleak budget period. And I think if RISE were to, you know, have problems and we didn't have the money to assist it, you know, set aside, we would be back to people on the street, which I don't think is humane or advantageous for the city.
Sure. You talked about the fiscal problems that we're facing. We always used to run a big surplus. And we had a commissioner that would never raise taxes. I think it was good for being reelected. And the city I came from, which is a little west of here down in Gloversville, which has fallen on hard times when their industry went out, they're facing a huge tax increase. And it's because they hadn't had, I always say it's better to have little tax increases maybe every year or every other year so you don't get to the point where.
Incremental is certainly better than the punch in the face.
Yeah. I mean, we depended, I think, too much on our surplus because we're a vibrant city and we do get money from different avenues than a lot of other cities do.
So where that affects, like, my department is the average DPW truck is, like, 12 years old. You know, so where we're servicing trucks that should really be retired, we have an obligation to maintain they stay on the road. And that comes from that type of budgeting where there wasn't, you know, investment and overturn, and particularly the equipment stuff. That type of budgeting would have made, you know, good money after good money.
And there should have been a plan. I mean, when I was, we talked a little bit before about my father being on the council, and I used to be kind of involved with him. They always had a plan. So many years out, they would switch vehicles, or, you know, they'd sell the vehicle they had and then get new. But there was a plan in place. I don't know how many years it was that they did that. But, it's sad when you get to a point where you don't raise taxes and then you get nailed with a big tax increase. And, you know, most people just carp and complain when that happens because everybody thinks Saratoga's a rich city. But
yeah, no, I agree with that. And just to dovetail with Commissioner Marshall said, too, you know, we have 25, you know, police vehicles. And so we haven't had money for a new police vehicle in a couple of years. So what you're doing is you're just kicking that can down the road because rather than just having a long-term plan to replace two vehicles every year, you're not going to replace vehicles for 5 years, and then you're going to have to buy 10 new vehicles.
Right.
And that is just poor planning.
Poor planning,
In my view. And if we did, again, you know, we had 10 years here of not raising taxes, which sort of inverted us that we rely so much on the economic development of our businesses to provide the revenue for the city. It puts us in a difficult position.
Sure. How's the Belmont affected public works and public safety? Because we get a huge, I mean, our population increases in the summer anyway with the track being open. But how's that affect your departments?
Tim, for Belmont on Broadway and the race itself, I mean, Tim's department is more, you know,
involved
feet on the ground type thing. I mean, you know, we provide the cleaning and, you know, making sure Broadway's closed and stuff like that. But I'm a big believer in, you know, Belmont, the Travers, SPAC. They all make, you know, Saratoga what it is. Mm-hmm. And when the city has to play a role in ensuring that we remain that destination. I mean, I think having the Belmont for the 2 years and now getting a, you know, bonus year, if you will, really put us on a national stage, and I think it's become a destination, you know, more of a destination than it was previously.
Sure.
So I think we have to, as a city, we have to support those types of events to make sure that they keep the prestige and the draw that the city is.
Right, and bring in the income, I mean, for added.
Yeah, and to dovetail what Chuck said, the Belmont is a big lift for us. That's a national special event. And we start planning for that in January. We have training exercise, sometimes tabletop exercises, full training exercises with role models. And then we use 18 to 20 agencies that help us, you know, from the FBI. Last year we had a no-fly zone with the FAA,
right?
Down to our state partners, New York State Police, and certainly our relationship with the county is incredible. And they give us all those extra resources mm-hmm. we need. And I do want to have a shout-out to them because we couldn't do it without that assistance. That's a huge special event. I've made this claim before, and we are not going to have a special event that's complex in that size without doing it properly.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, you have to. You have to make it safe. And one thing about Saratoga is a big venue, the races or SPAC or that, is we've never had huge problems with, you know, like some of the sports venues do. And I think that's a testament to,
I think 2 years ago you had Fish and Travers on the same weekend. I mean, you're talking about 75,000 people, you know, coming into a city that's already 30,000, you know, people.
Right.
I mean, last year on Belmont on Broadway, I've never, you know, you couldn't turn around without seeing some version of law enforcement. So it's always safe and everyone does a good job. And I think the other side of it is I think the people that come feel the same way. Like, they don't want to ruin the opportunity for others, and they want it to come back. You know, my neighbors all love this stuff. So, again, just glad it works out. And, you know, I think it goes back to the point about the races and stuff, though. I think that there's a tone, like one Saratoga, there's a tone of civility that's, you know, coming in from the middle. I have two kids, and one of the things I try and tell my kids all the time is, like, you're never going to change the world, but you can change, like, little things. And then, like, if your little things change and then, you know, that grows, that's how you make big change.
Sure. Well, one of the things we, you know, to my perspective on just what you said, we can't really affect the national level.
Right.
I mean, you know, we're individuals and it's a big collective that has to do that. But we can control the city. Of what we do. Even the county's hard because you have so many towns and cities in it. But the city, people have a stake in, and they should make their voices heard civilly to be involved in with their elected officials, you know. And you're the two biggest departments in the city, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, so my department, we have approximately 211 employees and six labor unions and around 60% of the budget.
Mine's about 110 employees, two unions, and 20% of the budget.
Okay. So that's a big chunk right there, you two. So it's good to have professionals and such as yourselves on the council to manage all that stuff. Six unions.
Yeah, well, so I have the fire department. There's a couple of unions in the fire department, a few unions in the police department, and then we have other CSEA employees as well. I also have code enforcement as part under my umbrella, and I can't. It's a shout out to the city hall employees, and a real shout out to the command staff of our police and fire department. They run the day-to-day operations of their department. They just do a fantastic job.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure Chuck feels the same way about his management team, keeping track of all those workers.
I have two. It's two unions. One, you know, both are CSEA. One CSEA DPW. One CSEA City Hall. One of the things that I have, and I always try to acknowledge this, is, you know, Mike Veach is the business manager for DPW, and he's kind of like that stabilizing force because he's been there 9 years. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that I did, and thankfully I did it well, I appointed Tad Romer, who's my deputy. He's a Democrat, so not a party affiliation, not a partisan hack type thing. He's a licensed architect who's done high-rise projects. But more importantly, he's a project manager, you know, who tries to, similar to myself, implement some of the private sector thinking into, you know, what Public Works is doing.
Yeah, it has to be complex. And I like your saying that you appointed the best person, qualified person for the job, whether it's Democrat or Republican, where so many times it's a friend or whoever that comes in as deputy.
Sure.
Yeah, and so you guys lend a little credence to your position, because I know Tim used to be a former FBI.
Yeah, so I spent 30 years, you know, in the FBI, and 10 years I worked pretty much narcotics investigations, which now the Safe Street Task Force in Harlem, and then middle of my career, I ended up running the Joint Terrorism Task Force and being, I was the International Terrorism Program Coordinator. And then the later part of my career, I ended up working, you know, white collar matters. But I do want to say, I also, my deputy is Deputy Dan Charlson, who came from the state police, a retired captain from the state police. So we do have, you know, very, very professional leadership there.
Sure, that's great. This is more Chuck, under your purview, I think. I've been reading. We have a water problem in Saratoga coming up, and this is nothing that started under your tenure.
No, it did not.
But this has been going on, as long as I've been here in Saratoga, back in the early 80s. I mean, they're always looking for new water sources. And so our water source is Lufbery Lake. And
well, our primary water source is Lufbery Lake. So we basically have three different water sources. The primary water source is Lufbery Lake. We also pump water from Bog Meadow. Both those bodies go through the treatment plant and then get distributed out into the system. We have a third source, which is the Geyser Well field, and that's off of like Hathorn in the crest. That gets chlorinated and fluorinated out there, and then pumped into the system. So what happened was that early in like 1988, I think the water source was Lufbery Lake was identified as a water source in 1964. In 1988, they identified the degradation of the lake. In 2001, they supplemented that and again said the lake's degrading. That 2001 study, what was used as the justification for looking at Saratoga Lake as a water source. And then, went many years. In 2024, the council did an RFP to look at Lufbery as a, the quality and quantity of storage in Lufbery. And then, the findings started to come out in late 24. I didn't get into office till March or end of February of 25. And then within 2 weeks of being in office, I issued an RFP to look for additional water sources. My opponent has, claimed that I've hid that report, but I emailed it to him. Yeah. But I think the more important part is that, I started working on identifying the other sources, not perpetuating the problem of just, releasing the report. The report indicated that there are two alternatives that should be immediately sought. One was dredging Lufbery, and the other was identifying additional water sources. With the ongoing dam project, dredging Lufbery was financially and from an engineering perspective irresponsible. So we pursued the identifying other sources.
And that, that always takes time. You just can't come up with a source in a month or two.
No, and again, one of the things that I think people have to consider is it's not something that I, disregard. I mean, my kids drink the water. One of the Department of Health engineers for the state lives within the city and his kids drink the water. So I'm in regular contact with people. And God forbid there was something that needed to be addressed, we would do so immediately. Yeah. Again, my opponent, who's made like this his sticking point, even during the League of Women to Voters debate, he says the water is safe. So the water is safe on a, drinkability perspective. But yeah, I guess I'll put it in the simplest term, and I said this to someone last night, 30,000 cars a day drive over Lufbery Lake. So the city controls, probably less than 5% of the overall watershed from a stormwater perspective. Like, it's just not a good source of water. Like,
right.
You want your water to come from a Appalachian spring that's
right,
on top
pristine.
Of a on a top of a mountain,
yeah.
And ours just does not. But we treat it, and again, Brett Johnson, who runs the treatment plant, has been there I think more than 20 years, and an extremely competent person. So I trust his judgment in running the plant.
Sure.
And when he says to worry, we will.
I always worried. Well, I mean, I don't say I'm worrying about it, but with tractor trailers overturning as they seem to have been, that you haven't had one of them go off the road into that lake. And I mean, that would have been a huge problem because they only have those guardrails. But I mean, you see tractor trailers overturning on the Northway right and left. And half the time I get caught up in them coming down from the school in Queensbury that I take my kids to in the school bus. And so I was always concerned that that's a major thoroughfare right there.
No, again, the New York State DOT tracks traffic, and it's 30,000 cars a day that drive over our water source.
Yeah. You know, this may be something, I don't know. I was always told keep it under wraps by a former deputy who's a friend of mine, but they have a huge water tank here on the campus. Yeah. And is that city water?
Yeah. So what happens is that all of the water that comes out of the plant gets pumped up to the, you know, reservoir at Skidmore. And that's what creates the pressure. So one of the things that, you know, people don't realize is, you know, you open your faucet and your water comes out. Well, the water comes out because there's so much pressure within the pipes, and that's what creates that pressure head, is that the reservoir at Skidmore.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's great. Skidmore comes in on another aspect of the city rather than just a big party town. But, Tim, what did you bring to the police department that was lacking?
Yes. So what I tried to bring is consistency. I have fantastic leaders, fantastic command staff, and we're working through, and I can't get into all the details, we're working through an agreement with the New York State Attorney General's office of how we are responding to protests in our city. So what I tried to bring to, I've worked on a task force with the New York State Attorney General's office, and you know, when I was in the FBI, and I just bring consistency to the office and strict adherence to the Constitution. And I know our command staff in the police department feels the same way. And I operate with a unified command structure, and I've done that. That's why I ran for office, because, you know, when the FBI goes into a city, whether it's Albany or Troy or Schenectady, we have to be unified. We work with their police chief, and we're unified. And I've done that my whole career. So that's why I knew I could be successful here. And I tried to bring that skill set, the unified, consistent command with strict adherence to the Constitution.
That's neat. How about you, Chuck? You have the knowledge of being an engineer. What have you brought in under your term? I know it's not been a long period.
No, I ran in a similar kind of way that Tim spoke of. You know, my primary job, right, you know, my professional job, I'm the director of real estate for Stewart's. Before that, I worked in municipal engineering. In fact, the firm that did the report for Loughberry Lake is the firm I used to work at. So traveling around New York, I saw some municipalities, and it was, you know, somewhat frustrating to me to come back and see that my municipality was making some of the decisions that I think that, you know, thought poorly. And I could bring some, again, private sector mentality to it. I manage a team at Stewart's of about 8 people, you know, 5 designers, project engineers, and the project, you know, property management. So when I came in, I had a running start. Additionally, I sat on the planning board for 3 years, and last year I was the chair. So when you are on the planning board and projects come in, you learn the specific needs of neighborhoods. So on Church and Van Dam Street, there's an existing truck route, and working with, you know, DOT and the neighborhood, and again, I'm a big believer in giving credit where credit's due. The neighbors were very active in developing an alternate truck route. And then we were able to put our arms around it and get DOT to buy in to indicate what they need to approve that alternate route. So that's the mindset I come in with, is just getting the right people to the table and being able to make a decision. I think one of the things I've done or was successful in doing that people said couldn't be done, we developed the first leaf schedule. So, you know, people were always wondering when you're going to come and, you know, when DPW would come and pick up their leaves. And we put out a schedule that basically broke the city. The four zones of the city are each now in a sequence manner. So you're given the 2 days, Monday, Tuesday, when, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday type thing, to pick up when your leaves will be picked up. And to date, we've been adhering to the schedule. I mean, it's like anything new, there's going to be growing pains. So there's, you know, as the leaf, the volume of leaves picks up, there's probably going to be some slight delays. But I think, again, you know, people said it couldn't be done. And, you know, working with the workforce, we kind of said, it can, like, just, you know, this is, it's not a NASCAR race. We're not, you know, running for pole position here. Like, just got to get the, you know, the volume of work out the door.
Well, I have to tell you, I've, in the past 3 years, I've had two spinal fusions, so I'm limited to, I had a landscaping garden center business. I always loved mowing the lawn, being outside raking, you know, and I can't do that anymore. So my wife, it's left up to my wife. But she loves the fact that she knows about what day they're coming, one day or the other, so she can have everything out front. And, I mean, they do come early, which is great. I mean, they start early. But when she hears that sound of the claw, she relaxes and says, ah, they don't have to sit out there for a week.
No.
And, you know.
I think it's also, and there is a, I mean, there's a quality of life issue, which is, again, it's predictable. But there is a sale that, I mean, I'm not going to, it's not as significant as the 25 mile an hour speed limit or something of that nature. But there's a safety element by just not having the debris out there for that long.
Yeah. Well, I mean, half the time it'll blow back or it'll start to get whatever. But I want to get into the 25 mile an hour, but I want to ask you first, I think, this is my opinion, and I think we see more problems coming up in both of your departments because of the demands that are put on by people moving in, by the city growing. I think you have more demands put on with the infrastructure, the water and sewage, and I think with you, with the police department. I don't know if you still run or if they ever did. I may have been a misconception on my part that for so many people, you need a certain amount of police.
Yeah, so there's national studies and ratios. And we're right now at probably the average of where we should be as far as police officers per population. But I think you're right. As we are putting in more apartment complexes, you know, 300, 400 apartment complexes, we need to increase our staff to address that. And it's not just policing, it's the fire department, which has emergency services. And we've seen some of those new apartment complexes, like the Entrada, for example, that's putting a lot of more stress on our police and fire response. So if we don't continue to grow to meet our expanded population, the natural thing what will happen is our response times will go down.
Sure.
You know, we have fantastic response times, you know, 6 minutes, sometimes 7 minutes in each department. But you don't want that to grow to 10 and 15 minutes because obviously that puts lives at risk.
So. Yeah, definitely. And I think, Chuck, on your side of it, I know, like I said, I moved up in 86 and I joined a service club. I joined Kiwanis because my father-in-law was a member. And we had Ken Klotz, who was the commissioner of, I don't know if he was accounts then.
I thought it was accounts.
Yeah. But he was a guest speaker and we got talking about, back then, I mean, the city was starting to get more population quick. And he said that the more people that move into the city, the more demands on our budget and money, because you have to tie new infrastructure into old infrastructure. And sooner or later, those sewer lines or whatever are going to have problems. And do you see that happening now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there, the population growth is an element, but I think just the age of the infrastructure is more important than, you know, the number of people. You have 100-year-old pipes, you know, in the ground, and it's just that's the way, you know, pipes are. We have about a 20% loss of water from the distribution side of the treatment plant. Now that doesn't account for sprinkler pads and hydrant flushing and, you know, fire suppression. When you take those out, it's probably within a range or acceptable range, you know, national standard type thing, 11-15% type way. What isn't accounted for is we have, I think it's 140 miles of pipe or 40 miles, I forget, but it's a huge number. And that represents about 35,000 individual connections. So going through and replacing, you know, again, is the loss detrimental? It's not detrimental, but it's certainly not good. But again, the cost of replacing the entire system would then again bankrupt the system itself.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I know Tim alluded to the fact that, you know, you're building a 400-house development, and they have to tie into older infrastructure. That's a demand that's put on. And, yeah, I don't know. It just seems to me that with growth, people don't see the increase in demands that the city departments have to catch up to.
Yeah, no, certainly for services. And I do think going back, you know, it's important that we are able to have the revenue coming into our city to meet those demands.
So I just want to, thing that we also, you know, I did in my department is that we have instances where we have sidewalks that have like missing links program and AD and certain instances of lacking ADA compliance. So one of the things that I did is we passed a resolution in May that said when a new development comes in, we can take the money from their sidewalk improvements, for lack of a better term, as an example. And if it's going to be a house or subdivision that's in the rural district or outer district, we can take the money in a payment in lieu of and use it for one of the established programs, whether it's missing links or ADA compliance. So using that funding, we actually are going to open our first ADA compliant sidewalk over on Tiffany and Geyser. We installed some ramping, and that was a need that was identified by Inclusive Saratoga. So the development, again, there are mechanisms to offset existing infrastructure problems with some of the development coming into town.
You know, one of the neatest things I think that was instituted was when you build a new development, you have to have sidewalks. Because the development I live in, Michael Manor, was built back in the 70s, and there's no sidewalks. And it scares me. A night like last night, we had ordered a pizza. And I went out, and of course it was rainy and dark, and the wind was blowing. And these kids are walking all around in the road, and with their parents, with no light. And I'm trying to pick my way. I'm going like 2 miles an hour trying to pick my way to see where they are. I get to the pizzeria, and they're closed. Well, they were there, but they lost all the power. And I just walked on the sidewalk. I saw a little light in the back, and all the power came on. And they had orders stacked up and paper they couldn't fill. So I said, geez, I called at noon to order a pizza for 7. And he said, well, what do you need? The power just came back. We'll make it right now. And I said, oh, great. You know, he said, this is the third busiest time of the year. And he says, we'll never catch up. But, you know, I think the sidewalk thing was a real bonus that people getting places in new developments can get.
I think, also one of the things that I came in and found is that the city had underspent its state touring route funds. So this is, you know, I don't want to be or have it misconstrued with the city's budget, but the city's allocation of state funds for trails and sidewalks and stuff like that was $7 million. So the city hadn't spent any of this money. So in working through that, we're going to be able to deliver sidewalks to Grand Ave, which is a project that started before me. I know there are some people that were disappointed that it's not a full bike path, but a bike path is about 3 feet wider than a sidewalk. Mm-hmm. And the residents who were affected just didn't want it. Now with, you know, going to the sidewalk, there are no permanent easements or takings that are required. So again, like we're saving both money in a way, and people's land in another. But in identifying this money, we're going to be able to do the Crescent Ave connector. We're going to look at the Excelsior Springs Ave connector. So there's, I think, going to be an opportunity in the next couple of years to build some substantial improvements to our connectivity in the city.
Yeah, that's great. 25 mile an hour.
25 mile speed limit. So the history of that is back in 2022, New York State changed the VNT law, vehicle and traffic law, and it allowed municipalities throughout the state to lower the de facto 30 mile an hour speed limit, you know, to 25 miles an hour. And that excludes school zones where already, you know, 15. So, but to do that, you had to have, you know, an engineering study that supported that and gave you the metrics to address it. And that, for a city our size, that's an expensive engineering study.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a grant available from the Capital District Transportation Authority or Council. I could be getting that word wrong, but they did the engineering study for us. And the metrics were clear. You know, if you lower the speed limits, and I have the metrics here, for example, if I'm a cyclist, so if you're hit by a car and, when you're riding a bike at 32 miles per hour, you have a 25% chance of dying. And if the car is going 23 miles an hour, you have a 10% chance.
Oh, wow.
So that is, that the metrics strongly support that. So what we're doing now, we passed the legislation in the summer to lower the speed limits. And we're now in a position where we're changing the signs, and many people have seen them. We're not going to start enforcing them until January of next year. We Complete Streets and Bike Atoga strongly support it. They've been sending the message out at farmers markets, et cetera, to tell the folks that this change is coming as well.
Is that going to be on every city street?
So it's on every city street except for the joint jurisdictional roads, and I'll get to those in a minute. But we started out with subdivisions, and certainly, 30 miles an hour in a subdivision is very, very fast, and actually 25 is fast as well. But the whole city will be 25 miles an hour, with the exception of the major arterials and the joint jurisdictional roads. And just to give an example of a joint jurisdictional road, one would be Route 9 in front of Treehouse that Commissioner Marshall and I have been working with the state to try them to get them to reduce the speed limit anyway. But those roads, when you come in, are 45, and then eventually will drop to 25. The state is not going to change their speed limit, but they've agreed to put what I call step-down signs on.
Okay.
So it will be 45, and then they'll say, they'll give you a warning, 25-mile-an-hour speed limit will be, you know, coming, will be forthcoming or something like that. But the point is, I do think it's, you know, it's one of these issues that can be controversial or not, depending on if you like it or not. But the point is, it makes our community safer.
Yeah. People, I mean, I would dare say that if you're in a 35 mile an hour zone, people aren't going 35.
Yeah.
They'll push it.
Sure.
A little more.
Yeah, there's what's called the 80th percentile speed. So, you know, typically the 80th, that's the average speed people go.
Right.
And it's probably, you know, in a 35, it's probably 42 miles an hour.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's sad. It's like on the Northway, it's 65, but you got cars in that third lane going 75 or 80. And I know with the school bus going through a school zone, most of them have 25 miles an hour. There are a few in Saratoga that are 15.
Yep.
I go in a trailer court that's 10 miles an hour, and I'll tell you that the vehicles in there don't go 10 miles an hour, and it's a pretty dangerous thing.
Yeah, I think some of those subdivisions would be private, and if it's private, like condominium complexes, they have the ability to set their own speed limits actually within those.
Well, they do.
Because they're private. Yeah, okay. So that might be a slight deviation. But, you know, for me, my point is, you know, it's all about service to the city. So I serve the entire city, and I know Chuck feels the same way. The number one complaint that we get from the community involves speeding, traffic, parking, you know, park signs. And we have a large city. It's the fifth largest geographic city in the state. you know, from the lake to over to Geyser Crest. So it is a large territory, and people, you know, certainly have different needs. So with that, like, that's the number one complaint we get. The number one complaint I get from the business community, going back to the homeless situation. We did a survey with our business community, you know, 30 out of 33 businesses we conducted interviews with said their number one issue impacting their business is the homeless population. So that's why we're taking that comprehensive approach to try to bring a solution for them as well.
And that's great. That's great. You know, in with another thing, in with a growing population and more developments and that, we have, how's the city landfill holding up? As far as
the city doesn't have a landfill anymore, it's a transfer station.
So it's
really we get a lease from Saratoga County to operate the transfer station. What was the city landfill is now a solar array.
Okay.
So the city doesn't have a landfill anymore. We have a transfer station. So Brian and Rosie. Brian's about to retire. So that'll be a big void to fill, because he's, you know, an institution out there. So we're trying to, you know, see if we can work toward a more progressive way of handling some of our waste. See if there's an ability to upcycle or, you know, some things that might be, you know, I think the saying is someone's trash is another's treasure. To see if we can get some of that stuff in the hands of people who need it.
Who need it, yeah. Well, that's, you can tell how long it's been since I've been out there.
Yeah, no, a lot of people don't go out there. You can still pay, you know, $2 a bag to throw out garbage.
Yeah.
But it's definitely not the landfill of yore.
Right. And most people have the
county waste or
county. Yeah, it just seems easier. But I remember my father-in-law was a carpenter that worked for a small builder, and Saturday mornings, he had a big, he always had a station wagon with the paneling on the side because he could fit his ladder and tools in. But the thing on Saturday mornings was the three of them would hop in the car and go to the landfill. And that was their fun outing on a Saturday morning, you know. But so, Tim, getting back, your two departments are the biggest, so you've got a lot of topics that you want to touch on. And the 25-mile-an-hour is going to be, I think, tough for people to get to grasp with, because they like to go fast, you know. But for a safety output, I think it's going to be better for the city.
Yeah, it will be a combination of enforcement. When I came to office, we reinstituted our traffic unit, and I wanted to make sure that we called it a unit, not division, so it was correctly represented, because it is small. It's only three people, so it's not. So enforcement is an issue, a part of it, but I know that the studies have concluded that most people will eventually comply with the speed limit as well. But there is a transition period. There is a learning period as well.
Now, Chuck, the building department, is that under your purview, or is it the mayor?
The mayor.
The mayor's. Yeah. Now, the software that he's implementing, will that help other departments also, or is that just basically for, the building department and inspection?
I think it'll tie into the accounts department, because the accounts department looks at, you know, building permits and how it affects home values. Where it might affect my department a little bit is we just previously all like right-of-way permits were there was a gray area, because a building permit would entitle you to encumber part of the sidewalk, but technically any right-of-way or street opening is under the Department of Public Works.
Okay.
So where the software will merge a handful of departments is there, where a building permit requires a street opening and, you know, subsequently will affect an assessment. But I do think the software, I think in instances in my experience as an applicant, would indicate that sometimes removing the human element for application materials is beneficial.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've known people that have had to go back three or four times, and that costs money to them. And, you know, the city, you have to.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, everything's uploaded to a platform anyway. So right. Just, you know, having direct access to do so is great. I think the mayor's on the right track with that one.
Yeah, we have a pretty sharp mayor. I don't know. We have probably 3 minutes left. So, wrap it up. You have the two biggest departments. You probably have the two biggest headaches in the city for managing all the people you do and all the different jobs that people don't realize what your departments do.
Yeah, Tuesday is election day. I'm running unopposed, but I know it's important that people take the time at local government and do the research and vote for, you know, the local officials that are professional, have the experience to do their jobs. And, I know, we're all trying to bring civility back to the city council. And I do want to say that doesn't mean that certainly we're perfect, right? So, when I make mistakes, I will admit those mistakes.
Sure.
I will always try to do better because we're all human. So, but that's what I would say. I want people to get out and vote.
Okay.
Yeah, to echo that, when they vote, I just hope they vote on the One Saratoga line. I think that, One Saratoga's popularity is really keen on, taking, the city and putting it first, putting it before party and not allowing, national politics to cloud the judgment.
Sure.
Again, I think that, there's no Republican or Democrat way to plow a street. And I think that, my experience with municipal engineering has been a benefit to the city already. And I think with two, the full term, I think I can show how that'll continue to grow.
Sure.
But I do think that the One Saratoga candidates are the most professional as a line.
I think it offers an independent voter like myself to see politics in a different way because, like you say, you're crossing doors, Tim, and you've been in.
I'm also crossing doors.
You are good.
I'm Republican in One Saratoga.
Okay, in One Saratoga. And with that party growing, that One Saratoga line growing, I think it's easier for an independent to take a look at.
Yeah, I mean, it's a place for them to go home to, right?
Yeah.
It's a city, city before party is a concept that everyone really, supports.
Yeah.
So, and we support as well.
And one last thing for me is, I was a member of the Independence Party, the Purple Party, as people called it. But no one remembers the fact that the New York State Democrats are the ones who eliminated it.
Right.
That local initiative by people to have a place for, common sense voters to go is welcomed.
Yeah, I like being independent. It's kind of like, you can pick and choose a little better than being straight.
Yeah, and we got a few seconds to go, but I do want to thank the leadership of One Saratoga. They are lifelong, Democrats, mm-hmm. If the leadership there. And it's challenging now, as Commissioner Marshall said, to even get on the ballot. You have to go out and knock on doors and get a certain amount of signatures. And it's somewhere in the 700 range of signatures. And this year they've doubled those amounts. So talking about the growth of One Saratoga and that people are looking for that independent, line to vote on. Because I think people are just tired of the political tribalism.
Oh, yeah. And, we didn't get into, man, I'd like to have you guys back on after election. We didn't even get into the lawsuits the city faces because of inept leadership. So it's refreshing to see two professionals being able to do a job and do it well. And I think both of your departments have come a long way because of that. So I want to thank you for being on this morning.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
It's no problem, and I hope you do come back.
Sure, absolutely.
Once you're in, and we can talk about the projects you're doing to upgrade the city and stuff.
Right.
So you probably have to get out and do some politicking today. So, hope the wind dies down for you.
Exactly.
All right.
Thank you
so
again.
Much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.